This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
You're listening to Valley Football First and Goal, the official podcast of the Missouri Valley Football Conference on the lineupmedia.fm network. Now, your host, Kelly Burke.
On this week's MVFC First and Goal segment, we are going behind the mic with the longtime voice of the Illinois State Redbirds, Dick Luckey. Dick, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Kelly. I'm very glad to be part of your show here today.
Yeah, we're glad to have you aboard. Well, you've called Illinois State football and basketball since 1981. And aside from a short break when you moved from WJBC Radio to State Farm Insurance, you know, you're in your 27th year calling football, and it will be your 31st year calling Redbirds basketball. What does your role and responsibility mean to you as the voice of the Redbirds?
It means a lot to me. I'm very, very affiliated with this university. I attended the University of Minnesota, but I'm, I would say, more emotionally tied to Illinois State than I am my alma mater.
Here we go. Snap good. Hold down. Kick up. It has distance. It is good.
It hit the good
and the Redbirds win the game. It hit the upright. It hit the left upright.
And
the Redbirds have won the game. The final score, Illinois State 9, Northwestern 7. For the first time ever, the Birds beat a Big Ten school.
You know, there was a time Illinois State was a complete afterthought in football. And that's obviously not the case now that Brock Spak and his staff have come to town. How would you explain the resurgence of Redbird football, and how is it viewed now in the Bloomington-Normal area and around the rest of the league?
Well, it is a totally different story, and it did get going with Todd Berry, who came here in 1997 and took the Redbirds to the playoffs a couple of times. I'm sorry, he came, I think, in 96, actually. But he left shortly thereafter. Denver Johnson came in and had some success, also had a couple of playoff teams. But what Brock Spak has delivered here over his 8 years is more consistency than anybody has ever been able to deliver. And then, of course, the season that ended with the national championship game was one that sort of put Illinois State on the college football map and really stoked the fires here in the Bloomington Normal and Central Illinois area for college football. There had been some excitement before that season, but that's the one that really has gotten people going.
Yeah. Well, after beating Northwestern, the Redbirds football team, they've dropped two in a row, including their conference opener to Indiana State. And I obviously, there were some injuries in that game that they were dealing with. Gauge where this team is right now, and what's the excitement level like heading to play North Dakota State again for the first time since the 2014 national championship game?
Yeah, with the fact that the Redbirds and North Dakota State have not met during the regular season, the fact that they've shared the conference championship each of those seasons, I think makes people around the league, I would guess, eager to see this matchup. But the Redbirds are not at their best right now, and it appears that North Dakota State is. The Redbirds are young, especially at certain positions. You referenced the fact that they're a little bit banged up, but that's not a big problem. I just think that they need a little more experience. They're potentially a very good team. They certainly showed that at Northwestern. They've had different sorts of problems in the loss at Indiana State than they did in the home loss to Eastern Illinois. Those are two pretty good teams, I think, and they came close to pulling both of those out of the fire. So, you know, the train isn't off the tracks. I think they potentially can be competitive against North Dakota State, but they're going to have to play better, certainly, than they have the past couple of weeks.
Yeah. You know, you worked at State Farm for 17 years as their media relations specialist, and I'm curious what the transition was like going from radio to that job, you know, and then also what your involvement was with State Farm during Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it was I saw it at the time as a great opportunity. I certainly wondered how much I would miss radio, particularly how much I would miss play-by-play. I didn't miss it as much as I thought I would at first, because I was very excited about this opportunity to learn about basically to see if I could do something else besides describe ball games, if I had that ability. And the realization that I did was really uplifting. I learned the property casualty insurance industry. My job was to communicate with the media about matters pertaining to State Farm insurance, sometimes controversial matters, matters of contentiousness. Certainly, you referenced Hurricane Katrina. That was a time when there was a lot of controversy and a lot of contentiousness. A lot of policyholders down there in Louisiana and Mississippi were not happy with State Farm because they didn't feel that they were getting the service, the claim service that they deserved. And reporters, particularly local reporters in those two states, were all over State Farm. And I was one of those who had to embrace the challenge of defending the company and explaining why we have to pay the money that we owe, but not pay more than the money that we owe because of our other policyholders who pay their premiums. So it was really challenging, but really rewarding to handle that issue and handle so many other issues that I handled during my 17 years at State Farm. I'm so happy that I did have that experience, and the fact that I was able to resurrect my connection with Illinois State shortly after five years after I started working at State Farm, and I resumed doing basketball duties, and then 4 years after that I went back to football. So it really worked well for me. I was very fortunate.
Yeah, kind of the best of both worlds, so to say.
Yes, exactly. That's what I had.
So you retired about a year ago from State Farm, and how have you been enjoying your little bit of extra time?
It's been good. I would counsel those who are coming up on retirement to be ready for a difficult transition, potentially. I think you have to learn how to be retired. I do miss a lot of what I had at State Farm. I miss certainly the people with whom I worked. I miss the challenges that I just talked about. I miss the challenge of learning new things. So it was an adjustment at first, but now it's been a little more than a year, and I've found some other things to do outside of my work with Illinois State Athletics. And I would say that I'm getting better at retirement. I probably still have a little ways to go.
Yeah. You know, in the news this week was Bob Lamy, who, as you probably know, is the play-by-play voice for the Indianapolis Colts. And he was in the news for saying the F word at the end of his broadcast calling the game against the Chargers last weekend. And so he's since apologized and, you know, also publicly said it was a mistake and unintentional. But I'm curious to know, you know, your thoughts on that mishap and whether, you know, since it was unintentional, whether you think the Colts need or should discipline him further in that situation.
You know, I was not aware of that situation. I know Bob Lamy. I worked in Indianapolis before I came here late 70s, and I got to know him a little bit. He was the voice of the Indianapolis Racers of the World Hockey Association back then. Had not started his time with the Colts, but you'll have to. And I think I missed a little bit of what you said just a moment ago. You'll have to explain to me exactly what Bob said.
So he was at the kind of the last two lines of calling the game. You know, the game had just ended, and he basically, in a nutshell, used the F word, used a profanity, to say the game is, you know, F blank over, basically, or finally, okay. F blank over. It was one of those things he didn't even realize he had said it. And somebody from their media relations department pointed it out afterwards, and he said, "You're kidding me, right?" And he went back and listened, and sure enough, he had said it. It was a little bit muffled, so you couldn't totally tell, but he was obviously really embarrassed about it.
Well, as I said, I know Bob a little bit. I don't know him real well. He's an emotional guy, And so maybe, and I'm an emotional guy too, so maybe, and most people who do this are. So maybe we're all prone to making that sort of mistake. I can see the possibility that I would sometimes, well, I have said things that I'd like to bring back into my vocal cords. It's very unfortunate. Hearing about it here, I feel bad for him.
Yeah. You know, the broadcasting world today is so different than it was even 15 to 20 years ago. And there's so much emphasis nowadays on TV and video. And so I wonder how you view radio's role right now and how you feel like the radio industry, you know, what they can do to stay relevant going into the future.
Well, that's a great question. It is a different world, even a lot different now than it was as recently as 5 or 6 years ago, because everything is available online. Streaming video is available online of every Illinois State football and basketball game. So I wonder how many people are listening to us. I think people here in Bloomington Normal and around Central Illinois who've been Redbird fans for years have become accustomed to listening to our broadcast. Some people of my generation are less aware than others of the possibility of the streaming video, but we have to have smaller audiences now than we did, which bothers me to some extent, although I don't enjoy any less the challenge of broadcasting a ball game. Maybe our role is evolving into more of the documentation of the event later to be played and used. You'll hear highlights of radio broadcasts on ESPN, exciting moments, or on other video outlets. And so I think that's part of the role we play. But I do question where this industry is headed, radio as a whole, and play-by-play sportscasting in particular. And it bothers me because it's what I love.
Yeah. You called Illinois State basketball games, rather, obviously, when Dan Moeller was a player and his teams, won conference titles and went to the NCAA tournament. Now that he's the coach of the Redbirds since 2012, does that make you enjoy the games even more? And is it a challenge at times, for example, if they're not playing well, because you have such a longstanding relationship with him?
Yeah, I don't think that creates a challenge for me necessarily. I have great memories of Dan as a player. He was he was a talented player, an incredible defender, and an extremely intelligent player, as you might imagine. He certainly made the most of what athletic ability he had because of his intelligence and because of his grit. So I have wonderful memories of him as a player, and the last Redbird team to play in the NCAA tournament was the team for which Dan played as a senior, but way back in 1998. He'd like to coach a team, and I think he will coach a team, a Redbird team that makes it to the NCAA tournament. As far as my relationship with him and how that was impacted by the fact that he played here and I was broadcasting then, I think it was a smoother start for us because we knew one another. We knew what we were all about. But as far as, and I'm not a guy who's going to be real critical of a coach. My philosophy is when a coach makes a challenging decision, like whether to call a timeout or not call a timeout at the end of a close game, what I want to do is ask the coach, or even on the air, talk about why the coach did or did not call the timeout from my perspective. And then after the game, whether it worked or not, talk to the coach about what was he thinking about when he did make the decision. What were the considerations? I can't understand broadcasters who say, and those who played the game and have coached the game before are certainly in a better position to do this than I would be, but I can't understand somebody like me who never played at that level, never coached at that level, saying, oh, he should have called a timeout there, or he shouldn't have called a timeout there.
Yeah. What do you consider the greatest Redbird moment that you have been on the call for?
Football or basketball?
Yeah, either one.
I think of Dan scored the winning basket in the win over Tennessee in the first round of the 1998 NCAA tournament. That comes to mind. But as far as the game that I most enjoyed broadcasting, that was most intense for me, was the national championship football game, even though that was a Redbird loss. That game, that atmosphere in Frisco, I'll never forget it. That broadcast for me was unlike any other that I've ever done. In the course of doing a game, especially during a timeout, your mind wanders a little bit. I might be thinking about, something else that's related to my life. Those thoughts might even sneak in while the game is going on sometimes. But there was none of that in that game. From the start of our pregame show until the end of the postgame show, I was just so locked in to that game. And of course, it was the Redbirds scored with a minute and 38 seconds to go to take the lead, and then wound up losing the game on a touchdown run by Carson Wentz, who's now one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, it appears, which is amazing. But he was so amazing that day. That was his best college game, and he made some huge plays and ran for the winning touchdown after throwing a pass that put them in position to do that. And North Dakota State is obviously, what they've accomplished is just incredible. But that game and the memory of that game is still so vivid in my mind, and I think will be until the day I expire.
Do you ever go back and listen to the audio from that game?
I have listened to some of it. Particularly, well, my call of Trey Roberson's, I think it was a 58-yard touchdown run that did put the Redbirds ahead with 1:38, has been much played around here. So I've heard that, but I used to listen to myself a lot. I probably should listen now, but I'm at a point in my career where I'm uncomfortable listening to myself too much. So I haven't. One of these days, I'll sit down and listen to that entire game, because I think it was a pretty good broadcast, but I'm almost afraid to now, because I'm afraid that actually listening to it will spoil the image that I have that it was a pretty good broadcast.
When you, going back to that season, when you were entering that season, back, let's say in September, did you ever think that team had the potential to reach that national championship game that year?
I was not expecting that. I mean, they got to play their first game at home, but then they had to go to Eastern Washington, and they had lost there a couple of years, two years previous to that. They won that game mostly because Eastern Washington couldn't get Illinois State's offense off the field until they scored. The Redbirds could have left their punter at home for that game. He was not needed. It was an incredible offensive performance, and yet it was, I don't remember the score, but it was a relatively narrow victory. Eastern Washington marched up and down the field as well. And then when we went to New Hampshire and came from behind to win that game, that was the game I remember almost breaking down at the end of that game after the Redbirds won it with just sheer happiness. The thought that we were going to the national championship game, it was a pretty big shock to me.
You've worked several high school state tournaments for the IHSA. What was that experience like, calling high school sports versus college sports?
Well, I'd had experience calling high school sports on the radio at WJBC when I was full-time there early in my time here. And so I was very familiar with high school basketball. And in fact, that year, a local school here wound up winning one of the years that I did the games. A local school, U-High, won the state championship. So that was extra exciting. But what I was not familiar with was television, and it was pretty intimidating to me, the fact that I had to look into that camera, as I'm looking into the camera right now, was intimidating to me, and it still is intimidating a little bit, to be honest. Television is still not something I'm very familiar with, but it was a great opportunity for me, and I worked with some fantastic people. Greg Sterick, who is Mike Reese's partner for the Southern Illinois basketball broadcasts, was my partner for the 5 years that I did the games, the Class A state tournament on the IHSA network, and it was fantastic working with him, and it was a really, really good experience. But it was pretty much the end of my television career. I've stuck to the radio. People have told me I have a face for radio, and I'm with that. I'm very comfortable when I'm talking and nobody's looking at me.
One thing that I asked Art Haynes last week was that there's so many long-term play-by-play radio guys in the Missouri Valley, both in football and basketball. You know, Mike Reese, Art, Dave Snell, Mike Kennedy. I'm probably leaving somebody out off the top of my head. But what is the camaraderie like amongst you guys?
Oh, it's really great. Gary Rima is another one from Northern Iowa. Brian Fritz has been around quite a while at Indiana State. Bob Hannon at Youngstown State, who's not part of our basketball conference, but has been at Youngstown calling football and basketball for a long, long time. I consider those guys friends. I mean, we only see one another for the most part at the games involving our schools. But we generally talk a lot before and after the game, and I've gotten to know them. Some of them I've gotten to know pretty well, especially Dave Snell, who's nearby here in Peoria at Bradley. And we each have our own individual approach to doing the game, and I love listening to them, just to hear the way they do it. And as I say, we're all a little bit different. The fact that so many of us have been doing it for so long is a testament to how rewarding these jobs are. They're hard to give up, and those guys are great. I really have enjoyed getting to know them.
You know, it was fun to see the pictures that you sent me, and you're obviously a proud husband to BJ and a father to Gretchen and Hannah, and then a granddad to Claudia and Ryder. And so what does family mean to you? And what would be your advice, you know, to a young broadcaster that's coming up about finding a balance between your personal life and family and then the sports media?
Well, as I've aged, I've learned a really valuable lesson. Broadcasting was my life when I was really young, especially before I was married, and even after I was married for a time, and even after Gretchen, who's the older of my two daughters, was born. But at some point, it's been an evolving process, but I've come to the point where I realize that whatever I've accomplished in my life, it does not even compare with the job I had of raising those two girls and bringing, you know, first of all, helping to bring them into this world, but then teaching them to live in this world and live properly in this world. And of course, I've had a lot of help. Their mom has been fantastic in that regard, and others have been too. But I just feel the most gratified about what I've done in that area relative to what I've done at WJBC and with regard to Illinois State Athletics and with regard to State Farm Insurance. That's what I am most proud of, because I look at those two girls and I just feel really good about who they are and what they're going to do during the rest of their lives. And so you ask what counsel I would give to a young broadcaster, who has a family. I would suggest that they think strongly about that and think about what they want their legacy to be and what's most important to them in their lives.
You know, I was so sad to hear about your dog, Kiefer, and that, you know, you had to say goodbye to him after 14 and a half years last week. So I'm really sorry about that. And it's not my intention to make you emotional, but I think for so many, pets are such a big part of our lives. You know, I know I have a chocolate lab that's like our daughter. How did Kiefer impact you and yours?
You know, I had not had a dog in my life until him 14 and a half years ago. And, actually, we'd had another dog for a real short time before them, and he had some serious immune deficiency problems, and he died after just a few months. But I hadn't lived with a dog over an extended period of time until Kiefer. So I was foreign to that. My wife is a big-time pet person, And so she sort of introduced me to that world. And I was a little, I must admit, reluctant at first. And I didn't think that I would really become that attached. But you do. I mean, automatically, you just, those little four-legged creatures become part of your life. And the kids were gone by the time he came in. And so he was sort of our child at that point. And it just fascinated me how emotionally attached I became to him when I did not at all expect that to happen.
You know, I was thrilled to see that you are a longtime runner. I'm a former distance runner at Arizona State. I did
really?
Track and cross country. Yeah. So I still run about 4 to 5 miles a day, not near as fast as I used to in college. How did you start running and what do you enjoy about the sport?
I ran cross country in high school, but after that, I certainly didn't have the sort of talent to run it at the University of Minnesota. And so after that, I sort of gave it up and did what, you know, young men do, played pickup basketball and slow pitch softball and touch football. And I just loved competing athletically. But I didn't really get back into running until one day at the YMCA here in Bloomington. And I would play noon ball there on a regular basis. This was when I was 44 years old. So I'm talking 22 years ago, there weren't enough people to really get a game going. And a bunch of guys I knew would go out. They're a running group here at the local YMCA. And they said, why don't you join us? And so I did. And that was the start of it. And I loved it. And it became a really important part of my life. Running allows you to compete against yourself. And that was really, and I'm sure you can identify with this, it just lit a competitive fire inside of me. And it turned out that I could do it better than I thought I could, better than I did in high school, really. And so I started, you know, becoming pretty competitive in my age group in races here locally. And it was the most gratifying athletic experience of my life. Tremendously rewarding. I just loved getting out there and doing my speed work and getting my mileage up and trying to do better in races. And now you talk about you're slowing down since your college days. I'm pathetically slow at the age of 66 relative to what I was as recently as about 6 or 7 years ago. But I still do it. I still love it. I can't compete like I did. But it was a big part of my life.
What's a favorite race that you've ran and where is it?
Well, I did get a chance to run Boston. The first marathon I ever ran was in Chicago, and I didn't even know what the Boston qualifying time was, but I achieved it by about 30 seconds or so. And I didn't know I had done it after the race either until somebody told me to say, hey, you qualified for Boston. You could go. And so I did. And I have relatives in Boston, so that made the experience even more special. They were there to watch me. They live right in Wellesley, right near the halfway point of the course at Wellesley College. And so that's probably my most memorable race. Although I ran the marathon in St. Louis and won the Grand Masters portion of the marathon, which I was also shocked with. The caveat there is that the St. Louis Marathon is the same weekend as the Boston Marathon. Mm-hmm. So all of the better runners are in Boston, and I capitalized in St. Louis. But that was really cool too.
Well, if you ever get the chance, I don't know if you enjoy wine, if you and your wife enjoy wine, but Napa has a half marathon every summer, and it runs through the wineries, basically. I've done it, I think, 3 times now. They actually serve wine at mile 11, which I don't ever take it because you don't really feel like drinking wine at mile 11 in a half marathon. But
no.
The scenery is just incredible. I mean, there's even wild horses early in the race. So I highly recommend if you ever get a chance to do that race to head out there and do that one.
Well, the half marathon used to be my favorite distance, actually. I think I was most competitive at that distance. And so that's an intriguing suggestion. And I'm pretty sure I'm done running marathons anyway, but I think I can work up to a half marathon. So I'll remember that. Thanks for the tip.
You're welcome. You know, Dick, is there anything that we haven't touched on that you want to share?
I guess what comes to mind is how fortunate I feel to have gotten the chance to do what I've done throughout my life, and speaking particularly about the chance to broadcast Illinois State football and basketball games. For me, I was 13 or so when then Cassius Clay, later of course to be Muhammad Ali, fought Sonny Liston for the first time for the heavyweight championship, and Cassius Clay was this braggadocio guy from Louisville who nobody thought had a chance against Liston, and I was intrigued by him. He was different than everybody else, and I was really intrigued by him, and I remember listening to the call of that fight, and a guy named Les Kiter is the guy who called it, and as it was apparent as the fight went along that Clay was competing with Liston and then that he might even beat Liston, I was just glued to the radio and hanging on every word, and I remember distinctly the thought that, man, what if, and I'd had thoughts about doing radio play-by-play even before this, but I remember thinking, what if somebody was listening to me with the intensity right now that I'm listening to Les Kiter? How cool would that be? And that kind of, I think, is where I decided that was what I wanted to do. And the fact that I got a chance to do it at a collegiate level for so many years, and I'm, you know, until they boot me out of here, I'll probably keep doing it, is just remarkable to me. And I feel really fortunate, really blessed.
That's wonderful. Well, Dick, it's been a real delight to talk to you today and get to learn more about you. And thank you so much for taking the time.
Great talking with you, Kelly. Thanks a lot for having me with you.
Tune in next week for another episode of Valley Football's First and Goal with Kelly Burke, the official podcast of the Missouri Valley Football Conference, only on the lineupmedia.fm network. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and anywhere you get your podcasts.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.